Portage Health Foundation is proud to introduce you to Superior Educator Nina Fiorucci from UN Trout Creek Schools. Nina is a fantastic teacher that puts her all into every day. Her schedule is so busy, but she is always organized and offers students the absolute best she has to offer. She is enthusiastic about art and brings out the best in her students. If you know an amazing educator like Nina, go to superioreducators.org and nominate them to be recognized as the next Superior Educator.
Welcome back to segment two of Copper Country Today. I'm Todd Van Dyke. A new report has come out on the state of Michigan's K-12 educational system, and it paints a very bleak picture. As a matter of fact, the title of the report is Still Stalled. We've been fighting the battle to get education back on track in Michigan for a long time now. And I thought, in light of this report coming out, I would invite in a couple of people who know as much about the educational system and teaching kids as pretty much anybody I know. From the new Keweenaw Learning Center, Jeffrey Thornton is here, and Dr. Rahima Clarkin is here.
Thank you.
Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming in. I can remember, because I'm old, I can remember a time when Michigan's education system was considered among the best in the nation. Kids could read, kids could do math. We stacked up against any state in the nation. We have now dropped down into, overall, pretty much the bottom third. We are seeing some of the statistics, and I'm not going to numb everybody with statistics from this report, but some of the statistics in this report place our kids in the bottom 25 percentiles of states, and states that we used to point and laugh at because their educational systems were so off track. Mississippi, Arkansas, they're ahead of us now in many regards. What the heck has happened to us?
I think that it's, well, the report is called Still Stalled, so this is a 16-year-long stagnation. And the report points to 16 years where we haven't been moving forward. We're just stalling, and a lot of other states are putting a lot of effort into their education system and improving it. And Michigan is just staying put in the middle, well, and going down and down and down.
Well, yeah, because others are moving past us. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this indicates that we are doing a poorer job teaching our kids, or that maybe other states have improved their methods and therefore are kind of passing us by. Any thoughts on that, Jeff?
Well, a couple of things that were noticed in the report that they point to as examples. One is Tennessee, which was, as you mentioned, one of those states that was behind us.
Yes.
A decade and a half to two decades previously. However, they made significant improvements in two key areas. They did improve and increase accountability with teachers in the classroom, but they also balanced that with investments in financial support for schools as well to make sure that they were suffering no financial shortfalls. And now they're ahead of us.
Yeah. And we should comment too here that the conclusions that this report draws are based on figures through 2019. So we are not looking at the effects of the pandemic over the last couple of years. We know that that has caused a significant disruption for many of our kids at home learning, certainly not as good as classroom learning, tensions that came along with all of that. That has derailed a lot of our kids, and that's a whole other topic that needs to be addressed. But
that's true.
Is not included in what this report was based on. This is cut off before the pandemic began. So this is the trend that our state has been taking for the last, as you said, 16 years, and really, I think, probably somewhat before that.
Think about 16 years, though. That's the entire generation of a student body. They've gone through pre-kindergarten all the way through graduation. 16 years is an entire life of a child in our education system. So that's not a small amount of time.
No, it isn't. You're right. It's an absolute generation. And I suppose this becomes like dominoes, where you have an entire failed generation of kids. Well, I don't want to say failed, but it's an entire struggling, underserved generation of kids coming out. They're the ones who have to then turn around and feed the next generation coming through. They are less equipped to do it. This become like a feedback loop?
I hope not.
But it can in many sectors of society. You know, we need to continually improve the education of the next generation that comes after us so that they can help to support those generations that are aged beyond them as part of the social safety net that we live with.
And also to join the workforce and be part of the new group of university students and graduate students who feed the economy of Michigan.
There are a number of things that the report points to as problematic. You hit on a couple of them a few minutes ago, Jeff, in terms of money. We have, over the last few years, started to feed more money into our system, but we went through quite a long period of time where we didn't see much of an increase, and indeed, in many cases, because Michigan had some economy problems, actually saw decreases in the amount of money that was going into the system. Money is good, but not a cure-all in and of itself.
That's true. You just can't throw money at a problem and expect a solution to arise. But one of the things that were that was pointed out in that report was that educational funding and financing was not meeting the targets as set out by state law. That state law was requiring an 11% outlay, and many years we're only reaching 7%.
Yeah, and that reflects in a whole bunch of other things that we have to start to talk about, including teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we look at teacher salaries, they haven't appreciated significantly over the last few years. We're asking our teachers to do a lot more than we used to ask them for. We are trying to hold them more and more accountable than we used to, and we are hoping that they get continued education to a level that we never expected from them before, but we haven't seen a corresponding increase in pay and benefits
exactly
for teachers. How has this affected our teacher pool?
There is a huge shortage of teachers currently in the United States, not just in Michigan. And the problem is that they're very educated individuals. So teachers have to go to school for a bachelor's degree, and then over the course of their career, they have to get all these extra credits, and that often leads to a master's degree and sometimes even to a PhD because they're continually being educated. So if you compare the salary of an average teacher who has a master's degree with someone of a similar age with a master's degree, teachers are getting paid much less money. But we want smart teachers.
Well, and let's face it, teachers are in education because they enjoy education. Not only providing it, they enjoy being educated.
Obviously, yes. Once you see the spark in the eye of a child when they learn something new and they are excited and passionate about a topic, you don't want to pursue any other career.
It's that intrinsic value of being a teacher that drives us. You know, nobody goes into education expecting to get rich. However, if we continue to expect teachers to do more with less, and indeed taking from their unreserved finances to supply their own classrooms, that doesn't make sense.
And while nobody has ever gone into education to get rich, there used to be a promise at the end of it, which has been reduced over the years. My mother retired as a second grade teacher 30 years ago. She still has the Heritage Health Insurance Plan. It has gotten her through 4 cancer battles with relatively little output from her financially, and she gets her pension. Now, teachers who have come in to the system over the last few years, they don't get as good a health plan when they retire. They don't get as good a pension plan when they retire. That always used to be the trade-off. Okay, I'm going to go through 20 or 25 years of relatively low salary, but I know that after that, I'm going to be taken care of. Is the lack of that carrot at the end on the stick there, is the lack of that carrot now hurting our teacher pool?
I think definitely it's hurting our teacher pool. And it's just hard to be a teacher. So it's also, you're not getting as much money, but then it's also becoming more difficult. There is a lot more red tape, a lot more forms that need to be filled out. There's a lot more requirements of what a teacher has to do in the amount of time that they're at work.
And that's not a new thing. When Mom retired, her comment was she could have taught for another several years, but she retired early. She said, if they'd only just let me teach.
Exactly.
A friend of mine retired from a local school district a year ago, and her comment to me was virtually the same. If they'd only just let me teach. People go into teaching to teach, not to keep records, not that some of that shouldn't be expected, but there's an awful lot of bureaucracy involved now with being a teacher.
That's true, and it's led to a breakdown that I want to get to. We've been talking about teachers and earning salary commensurate to what they need. That falls along the lines of an employment contract. But some of the issues that you were mentioning before also imply that there is a social contract between society and teachers. You know, we give you our children, we expect them to be educated. The increasing burden of the bureaucratic red tape that falls on the individual teachers who are not trained to be bureaucrats is starting to put too much stress on those teachers and stress on that social contract that we have between society and teachers.
Well, and if you love to do thing A, mm-hmm. and you want to do thing A, in this case, teach.
And you're trained to do thing A.
And you're trained to do thing A. And the reason you're trained is because you love to do it in the first place. Mm-hmm. Continually being diverted away takes the joy out of the job in some cases. You know, if you're not doing it for the money, you have to be doing it for the joy.
100%. But I will also talk to this from being a school administrator. So I was a principal for 4 years abroad in an international school. And I do have to say some of the forms that we want people to fill out and the grading systems we want them to complete, all these things are important. But what ends up happening if we are not aware is that there's a creep. And this year I'm asking you to do this form for this student. Next year I'm asking you to do 4 forms for different students. And the year after that, every single student in your class has a different form to fill out. And that is where we need to seriously reconsider the requirements that we are imposing on teachers and administrators of schools in order to just do their job.
Talking with Jeffrey Thornton and Dr. Rahima Clarkson from the Keweenaw Learning Center, which is a new facility that they are opening here in the Copper Country. They're going to be providing tutoring services for middle schoolers up through high school and perhaps a little bit beyond. You have both worked for quite a long time in China.
Yes.
You taught English in China.
Yes.
You've seen the Chinese educational system. Mm-hmm. How is it different from ours?
There are so many ways that the Chinese education system is different. There is first a very fundamental difference in how the Chinese society values education. Because they know that a very strong education will move you from poverty into the middle class, all families put a lot of financial resources into mm-hmm. educating their children and making sure that they go as far as they can in school.
But there's that a difference between the United States at this point? Are families perhaps not as invested in their child's education anymore? We rely more on the school district to push them through?
Well, I think American parents are just as invested, but there's different social aspects involved. That in China, for example, they don't have a social safety net like Social Security like we do here. So that investment in a child's youth has a very practical effect that they want to...
your care system when you get
exactly.
old.
Exactly.
You're gonna move in with son and daughter-in-law.
Precisely.
Or something like
and
that.
And that's exactly what happens.
Okay, so that's certainly a different thing than we have here. How do the people in China, as parents, approach a classroom? I've talked to teachers here, and they say it's getting really difficult sometimes to deal with parents because they all seem to have different expectations, different levels of expectations, some not realistic. Is that the case in China?
I think that is the case around the world. Some parents really know their child well in terms of what they're good at school. And some parents are not as aware. And that has lots of things because kids actually can change their personalities between their home and their school environment.
Really? I'm stunned by this.
I mean, just like we change our personalities when we go out in public and when we're at home.
But this also leads to another issue that a few years ago, the phrase tiger mom became well known, the
yes.
Asian tiger mom. I've met more than a few. And the phrase does ring true. But it goes back to that investment of parents having a direct impact in the education of their child. Another thing to consider, especially about the Chinese education system, is that it is only mandatory to go to school through the 9th grade.
Oh.
The high school years of 10th, 11th, and 12th are entirely your choice. the family's choice to be there.
Okay.
So that makes it extremely competitive, because at ninth grade or all throughout middle school, all the students are jockeying for positions in order to get into the high school. And so kids have to study really hard from early on, because you, in elementary school, you're trying to get into a better middle school so that you get good test results to get into a high school.
Does it eliminate some of the problems that our schools face in terms of at-risk kids? Because by the time you get to high school, I would suspect that some of those at-risk kids have already fallen out of the system, and you're dealing with a group of students who are there because they really want to be there.
Yes. 100%. It's almost, the kids who have maybe unfortunately been washed out of the system in favor of those hyperachievers.
And
so that's why when we compare Chinese test scores for high school students with American test scores for high school students, we're actually comparing apples and oranges, because we're comparing an elite group of Chinese students to an American general population.
That's a great point. I've heard that made before, but thank you for bringing it up. Let's get back to our Michigan schools.
Yes.
At this point. Well, one more question, though, about the Chinese system, that as it compares to Michigan's system, I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the Chinese student body is pretty homogeneous. Sorry.
Yes.
They come from the same background.
Yes.
They have
mm-hmm.
the same social mores.
Yes.
True.
The American students tend not to be that way. We have, here in the Copper Country, we probably are a little bit that way, but certainly you get into the major cities, you've got people from all sorts of backgrounds and all mm-hmm. sorts of families and all sorts of different diverse roots. We can look at that as a strength, but it's got to be a challenge for teachers.
That's true. One of the things, going back to the report, however, that those homogenous urban areas and maybe less homogenous rural areas share was a significant lack in financing for educational districts, school districts, and programs.
And we still have, again, according to the report, we still have a larger disparity between our poor districts and our wealthy districts, even though many steps have been taken to try to close that up. It's better than it used to be. But we still have a significant difference between poor districts and wealthy districts here in Michigan, and that hurts the poor districts.
Yes. I think one of the report's requests is that we have fair funding. And Massachusetts has a totally different model of funding for their education system, where it looks at it from the state level instead of school district by school district and area by area. So that means that for all school districts, they're getting equal amount of funding, and it's coming from the state instead of maybe from property taxes in the local area.
Now, does that fair funding take into account school districts that may have extra stresses? We, for example, in the Copper Country, need extra money for transportation. Our buses run a lot of miles to get our students in and out. In Detroit, Grand Rapids, Benton Harbor, places like that, where there are a lot of at-risk students, more services may need to be provided. Does a system like that take that into account?
Yes, they had different models for how they would give funding per student and per school system for different kinds of students. For example, students who don't speak English as a first language, students who have learning differences, students who have physical needs that need more attention and resources.
Talking with Dr. Rahima Clarkin and Jeffrey Thornton from the Keweenaw Learning Center about a report that has just come out from the state of Michigan called Still Stalled, the State of Michigan Education Report. This goes up, as I mentioned earlier, through the year 2019. It does not take into account the disruption from the last couple of years with the COVID-19 pandemic. So as we look forward, what kind of things do we have to now do? We can talk about bringing in more money, but that has to be targeted in some way, shape, or form. Where do we spend it? Well, let me phrase it. Mm-hmm. Where do we invest it?
Well, another part of the solution set from the report was that we also were suffering from a lack of open transparency of educational information between school districts and parents. One of the issues was that many school districts are focused by the 11th and 12th grade years on trying to provide a trajectory and a projection of how students would do in standardized test scores. That is far too late, and it's too late to share that information.
That needs to be started a lot earlier, doesn't it? We need to get kids...
in elementary school.
Yes. Yeah, it's not that we need to get them on a career track that early. That's not it. But if you get to the point where you're looking at your high school kids and saying, gee, they're not reading well enough, they don't know enough math, the barn door is open and the horses are gone.
Precisely. And it's been in my experience as a teacher that the skills that are truly fundamentally necessary to make sure that students can have a positive trajectory through high school and into college, they fundamentally need to be set by the middle school years, if not before. The middle school years are fundamental towards ensuring that students will be able to succeed in their academic life.
And yet we have tried to do things over the last few years in Michigan. They passed a law a few years ago that said no child who can't read at grade level will advance from the third grade to the fourth grade. And yet our fourth grade reading levels are among the worst in the country. What the heck happened?
Some of the problems lie with implementation. We've had a lot of what I would consider to be top-down implementation of solutions that were generated within the community, within the educational industry, so to speak. But you know, we were talking about this earlier. You talk to any teacher, you go down to the grassroots level, they know what's going on in their classrooms, they know what solutions can be found and that can be implemented. I would posit that we need to produce more ground-up, bottom-up solutions instead of having a more top-down authority. We worked in a top-down authority, and we left that environment.
Yeah, so that's something we've got to deal with. We opened the door a number of years ago to charter schools.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
These were supposed to, at least the proponents of them said, it's going to bring in revolutionary concepts, new learning concepts. It's going to open up all sorts of advancements in education. Has it worked?
I think charter schools are as good as the organizations that run the charter schools. And there are some phenomenal charter schools. And I'm not going to name names, but there are some other charter schools that really should not exist. And the thing about charter schools is it really is a case-by-case basis, and we need them because they can do revolutionary things. They can try out new models of education, and we need that experimentation because our school system needs new solutions.
But have we seen things that they have developed move over into the general stream of education and become really successful?
Education has always been very traditional, and it takes a long time for change to happen. So I would say not really, not enough.
Now, speaking of traditional, I'm old. I went back to the traditional days when you went to high school. You had 6 classes or 7 classes. You had them all year long, and they were basic education classes, nothing fancy. Now we tend to split kids out. We go into semesters, trimesters. We do different things. We have fancy, and I'm not necessarily knocking that, but we're not doing any better now than we seemed to have done years ago. There would be people who would say, maybe we need to go back to the old-fashioned way, pound the basics, and let it work. Does it work?
Well, the model that you're mentioning for your education, and I was educated under it as well, as the old industrial education model that worked well to rapidly educate a foundational population of workers during the high industrial period of the United States, end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century. We are now well into the 21st century. I would say we cannot go backward.
Yeah.
We need to continue to move forward because the basics, the fundamentals are important, but the way that our current students and future workers in our country are going to use those skills, we don't even know how yet that they're going to use those skills. So we need to be able to improve upon those fundamentals by developing adaptive skills as well.
Yeah, I was in school when new math came in, and people scoffed at new math, but I see new math at use now. all around me. Those concepts were introduced by people for a reason, and even though we scoffed at them, we learned some things that now are very important and are taken for granted now as part of the math system. So, well, it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is to this report. Again, it is called Still Stalled, the State of Michigan Education Report 2022. I am going to put a copy of this on the Copper Country Today page. You can go to today's date on the Copper Country Today page. You can hear the program there, of course. We always do that. But I'm going to put this report up there as well. If you want to read it, take a look at it. It's 60-plus pages, as I recall. It's not something we could get too into the weeds with here on the program today. But if you want to take a look at it, you can see it, and you can see the recommendations that come with it and the problems that it points out. And Dr. Rahima Clarkin, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Thornton, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us. Again, they are opening
up a new service called the Keweenaw Learning Center. If you have kids who are looking for some assistance, some tutoring and such, look them up because they know what they're doing. And Copper Country Today will be back in just a moment.
Thank you.